All right, are you ready for chapter 7 of The Door in the Wall? Let's get started. The next morning, the weather cleared, and by the end of the fourth day, the spires of Oxford appeared. Before long, they crossed the Churl into the High Street. Everywhere Robin looked, there were students walking about or talking on street corners. They filled the punts and barges that crowded the two rivers. They sprawled under the park trees, eating bread and cheese. But wherever they were, they talked and talked and talked. Most of the students were poor and were dressed in every sort of party-colored gown or tunic. "It seems to me," said Robin, "as if they try to see how outlandish they can make themselves look." The travelers went up the High, then turned on past the Saxon Tower and the Market Cross to the St. John's College, where they were received with courtesy and where they spent the night. Beyond Oxford, the country began to be more rolling. Sometimes the road led through forests, then again it ran beside the river, crossed a bridge, and went up through a village. Once they had to turn aside and allow a cavalcade of horsemen to pass. It swept by in a fine parade of shining mail, bright banners, and gaily caparisoned horses. In their midst rode a lady with her attendants. Robin wished the lady had been his mother. Where was his mother now? Did she know about him and where he was? Did she know that he walked with help of crutches? They followed the cavalcade up the winding road to the top of the hill, where there was a sign announcing a fair at Witchwood B. "There will be jousting," said Robin. "There will be dancing," said John Go in the Wind. "And there will be little praying," said Brother Luke. "There will be no room at the inn, so we must not linger long." "Let us see a little of the fun," begged Robin. So they turned aside and spent some hours at the fair, tethering the horses near the gate, giving a penny to a lad for watching them. All the country people had come from miles around. They had brought cattle and sheep, dairy butter and cheese, whatever had been their portion after giving what was due to the lord of the manor. Lombards from Europe were there with goods from far-off lands. There were silks and velvets from Italy and France, laces from Flanders. Robin wanted to be everywhere at once. He wanted to watch the tournament, the bear baiting, the wrestling, and the racing. He wanted to taste all the food, the pigeon pies, the honey tarts, that suckling pig with the apple in its mouth, and the jugged hare. He flitted from one booth to the other with Brother Luke after him. Finally, Brother Luke said, "Hast seen enough, lad? It is a good way to the next hospice, they tell me, and we have 2 or 3 days' journey ahead of us. So come, my son." "Let me see only the rest of the Punch and Judy, then," agreed Robin, "and I shall be willing, for never have I seen anything so funny." "For that only, then," said the friar, and went to find John, who had been playing tunes and earning a few extra farthings from the dancers. By night of that day, they reached an abbey set in a hollow. Its square tower stood above the trees in sign of welcome to the travelers, who were most grateful for the hospitality of the abbot. He told them of the best road to their destination and of the deep wood through which they would pass. There was frost on the ground when they started out next day. They had been a week on their journey, and according to the abbot's counsel, they had still 2 days or more to go. Great rolling hills began to appear, and over them hung clouds filled with rain. And rain it did before the hour was out. Then, when they had begun to enter the wood that embraced the hill, it slackened and the sun came out. "Let us halt here for our midday food," said John, whose jerkin was wet because his cloak had been left hanging out the window of the White Hart. "Here I shall build a fire to warm us and dry our clothes." "Let us hope we are not overtaken by marauding Welsh," said the friar hopefully, "for we are at the border. We shall say the office to remind us in whose care we are, here as well as everywhere." They knelt in the woods as if it had been a cathedral, as indeed it looked to be. for the trees, bare of leaves, arched overhead, and in the very same way that the groined arches of stone swept up high overhead in the Gothic churches. Maybe that is where the idea came from, thought Robin. The fire felt comforting and warm. There was no ale and only one withered apple left, but water flowed in the river hard by, from which John filled the leather flagons. After they had eaten, John sang a ballad while he dried his clothes. When Robin asked if he might try the harp, John showed him how to hold it and pluck the strings, but it was not so easy as it appeared. John promised to teach him. By all accounts, said Brother Luke, this forest goeth for miles, and it may well be that we shall not come out of it by nightfall. Now I remember this wood, said John, nodding his head, though it was but once I went through it. It is of great size, but there is a woodsman cottage, I recall, where we can shelter for the night. I found the woodman and his good wife, courteous and kindly folk, willing to share what they have. Let us be on our way, said Robin, now that we are near to our journey's end. I wish to see my godfather, Sir Peter de Lindsay. Think you he is a good man, as my father says, John Go in the Wind? Will he want me now to stay with him? For how shall I be an esquire or even a page? Robin was thoughtful. It is well known in the country roundabout that he is a gracious master and a noble knight, said John. His lady, too, is well loved for her goodness to the poor. Fear not, my son, the friar assured him. Thou'lt find kind friends in thy new home. All afternoon the way continued through the forest, yet there was no sign of its coming to an end. The dusk began to fall, and the howl of a wolf sent shivers down Robin's spine. Still, no woodman's hut appeared, and there was naught but forest trees and brush on every hand. Finally, when it was so dark they could hardly see the path, Robin pointed out a feeble light. "See there, through the trees," he said, "a small cottage. That must be the place." Ah, oh, John sighed in relief. Then I was not mistaken. It is the woodman's cottage where we shall lodge tonight. How welcome the hearth and fire will be, declared Brother Luke. Let us hope we shall be as welcome. By my faith, if we be not welcome, then the serf is an ingrate, for when I passed this way before, I helped yon woodman bind up the wound he'd got from a fallen axe. Then I carried him on my back to the cot where the woman tended him. The woodcutter and his wife made them welcome and shared gladly with what they had. The ale was well brewed, and there was peace, porridge, and bread for supper. Then John played the little harp and sang. The next morning, well refreshed, the three voyagers set out on the last leg of their journey. The weather was neither fair nor rainy, neither hot nor cold, but somewhere in between. As English weather is like to be, said the friar. When true daylight arrived, they had come to the edge of the wood, and now the hills stood all about, being very high toward the north, where the Welsh mountains loomed in the blue distance. For the most part, the road lay low among the hills, winding in and out, following the river. A heavy mist hung over the valley, so thick it was like a white blanket which parted only enough for the next step to be seen, then closed in again. When wayfarers were met, it was as if they had appeared by magic, out of nowhere. Once, where the road was narrow, a group of peasants suddenly came out of the mist and stopped to ask their way. Their speech was very strange to Robin, but John Go in the Wind seemed to know what they said, for he directed them in the same strange tongue. "They are Welsh," he explained, "and have wandered out of their way in the fog. My mother was Welsh, so I know some of the words. There is much trouble with the Welsh along the border here, but these seem like harmless folk." Late in the afternoon, a breeze suddenly sprang up. In a few moments, the mists lifted and the air cleared. Robin looked up in amazement, for there, rising high against the racing clouds, stood a town with a church tower and castle complete. It must be. It was Lindsay. "Look," he cried. "Look, there it is. We have arrived." "'Tis true," agreed John. "'Tis as I hoped. We have arrived before sundown and can enter the castle before the gate is closed." "Now, thanks be to him who guided us aright," said Brother Luke, devoutly blessing himself. "Lindsay it is, surely," said John, "for only Lindsay stands so on a mound ringed with hills, like a pudding in a saucer. We've but to cross yon bridge, go up the hill and through the town gate, and we are there. From the market cross, 'tis but a step to the castle gate. It is a happy end to our journey. Beyond the town and castle lives my own mother." They crossed the bridge and started up the hill. Now that he was so near to his destination, Robin dreaded the meeting with Sir Peter. What sort of welcome would he have, limping as he was on crutches? What sort of page could he be, having no free hands for service? Robin need not have been afraid. As soon as they had passed through the outer gate, a messenger went swiftly ahead of the travelers to announce them. The drawbridge was down, and the gate opened to them without question, and they were received in the great hall as if they had been emissaries of the king. Sir Peter was scarcely recovered from his wounds. He sat in a high-backed chair near the fire, while Lady Constance sat at her embroidery frame with a small girl leaning against her knee. Nearby were her ladies and two little boys who romped with the hounds. When the travelers entered the hall, Lady Constance rose, and drawing the children about her, stood beside Sir Peter to greet them. "It is a true pleasure to welcome you into our household," said Sir Peter to Robin, not seeming to notice that Robin could not straighten. "We are grateful to this good friar for his care of you, and to John Go-in-the-Wind, who is known to us. This is Lady Constance, and our daughter Allison, and these are my two sons, Henry and Richard." Lady Constance warmly embraced Robin, crutches and all. "We have long awaited your coming, dear child, and now we are most happy that you have safely arrived." And that is the end of chapter 7. Stay tuned for chapter 8 and be sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell so that you can know when we get it back on. Up and up and up. So talk to you all later. Bye.